Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Hey, good morning, and welcome to another episode of our Capital Region Creative Core listening session. We have on the line with us today, Roz Myers. Hi, Roz.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fine. I'm fine. Thank you for coming on and, you know, sharing a little bit about yourself as you talk about the intersection of environmental justice and creating gardens. You know, want to take out a moment to talk about yourself and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it. Any opportunity that I have to talk about gardening and how it supports our health and the intersection of environmental and food justice. So, my name is Roz Myers, a.k.a. Queen Amina of Sankofa 2020, Agrihood, and Queen Amina's 100 Gardens. So I would love to share my Sankofa journey with the with our family and listening audience. So my food, my health, and the environment is my intersection. And within the framework of Sankofa, my past gardening experiences came with my grandmother. And Southern cuisine is best known for its fresh vegetables. And gardening with my grandmother helped me to understand that. Our families always had to garden to supplement the food for our dinner tables. It was a matter of pride and satisfaction for a good meal. It has been said that when we eat well and enjoyed our food, we didn't know that we were poor. My grandmother loved and grew roses as well as vegetables, so we always had a beautiful garden and landscape. I wanted to take beauty and the necessity of food to the next level in my gardening experience by creating functional gardening structures that not only serve as raised beds, but also a place of refuge and entertainment where I can have my friends and family over to eat, cook, and create memories.
So, as for I was going through your online history, and I saw a little bit about the social justice work that you're doing. I know that you're talking about how you're bridging your childhood memories and, you know, the passing on of legacy, you know, with us. And while you're doing that, I'm in my mind thinking about, look at all of the social justice work you've been doing and all the marches that you've taken in place that led you to today. Could you talk a little bit about that, you know, as you are talking about where your grandmother is in social environmental?
Yes. Well, what has brought me to today is real basic, eating good food without pesticides, food that tastes good. That's really what it is, food that tastes good. And for it to taste good, it needs to be freshly picked. And you have to cut down on the transportation of the food from the farm or the garden to the table. So, and in doing that, well, what really triggered me, and I have to say trigger, was up under COVID when everyone was dying and the data and the demographics came back and it said that, you know, those first or responders, the first responders, or those people who have to show up every day in the service sector of our economy. What was their health like when the pandemic hit? So people were so busy, and convenience of food, the choices were something that was already prepared, fried, salt, and all of these other things that contribute to, you know, the onset of health problems, stroke, heart attack, cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, all of these things. So up under the pandemic, I said to my, and everything had shut down, I said to myself, if I could start gardens in people's backyards, then that would begin to solve some of this problem of no food. In addition to that, I live in a food desert, and the community had already begun or had been working on trying to secure a grocery store in our area for fresh vegetables and fresh foods. But the pandemic hit, and, you know, everything just stopped, just came to a screeching halt. So I thought to myself, why not build gardens in people's backyards?
Aha, and that's where you went back to Grandma and all the
yes.
things that Grandma. That's your, that was your aha moment.
That was my aha moment, absolutely. And I could take a deep breath with that because it has been rewarding.
You know, and I was like, okay, and she's talking about, you introduced yourself, and we always talk about our childhood, and we have our childhood memories, you know, that connect us to our lives today. And that's what was in my mind when I said, let me investigate Roz, and who is Roz Myers? So, you know, we all have Google profiles, and, you know, I saw all of the political work that you were involved in. You know, I know you've introduced yourself, you know, in terms of where the research, as a researcher, and, you know, petition, a driving force behind getting petitions out in the Meadowview and the South Community area there in Sacramento. And I saw all of the work you're doing with your union, our SEIU. How is Roz connecting that to the garden project, and what was her connector? And again, it was your childhood and where you came from, and being a part of the earth and a part of the land as your foundation. So So now I connected that with Roz introduces her Sankofa 2020 Afrohood Queen Amina's 100 Gardens and her zest for installing 100 gardens in communities across Sacramento, California, and as far away as Cuba.
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me about Cuba. Cuba is one of the biggest food deserts. The Western Hemisphere. And because I am labor, SEIU Local 1000, before I retired from state service or from state employment, I had reached the office of chief steward. And with that came a long experience of organizing and getting people together for a common goal and achieving that common goal. So I'm taking my organizing skills and the ability to identify a single issue and organize around it and have some movement for the good of the whole. So when I say 100 gardens, that's really what I'm talking about. And going to Cuba in labor as a labor delegate, I had an opportunity with a firsthand experience to see the conditions on the ground. So I'm taking a labor delegation the 24th of April to the 4th of May this year. And as we go there and discuss labor contracts and opening up Cuba for business and trade, I will also be taking seeds and building a garden there as a legacy relationship, if you will, and helping the people in a humanitarian effort. They have nothing. They have original soil, air, rocks, rain. Up under the embargo, they are prohibited from doing commercial trade on the open commercial market. So that just really means that they have to pay triple the price of anything to have for their people. So there's no money there. There's no economy. They rely on hospitality industry and tourism. With that being said, my mission this year in going to Cuba, and I'll have a second trip, which will be June 13th through June 20th, Juneteenth celebration with the Black Space Healing. So my mission for Cuba this year is to build a legacy garden, and for our community, I'm taking community members on the second trip, Melanin Day School Academy, families, to go and explore and understand our history. When I say our history, it's the civil rights struggle. The civil rights struggle in America and in the Caribbean, they did parallel. And all of the Africans that were brought across the Atlantic in the slave trade, that was not incidental, that was not a fluke. As I did my research, I came to understand that it was a business model, a business model. In that business model, there needed to be labor. And in order to have a return on the investment and have profit, you need to keep margins thin. So if you don't have to pay for labor, then the goods that you produce, you can realize a higher profit margin, and everybody's happy. The investors and the owners are happy, but your workers are not happy. The labor is not happy because it's forced labor and it's slave labor. So this was a model, a business model all over the world for labor and agriculture and planting of food and crops that could be turned into a good or another service for revenue, income, profits, that type of thing. But I don't want to get too far out because I know my mind will go down a rabbit hole sometimes.
I know, but I mean, that's really good information to have because, you know, we're, you know, connecting the links to the work you're doing there in, you know, in you're in Meadowview, the work you're doing in Sacramento, and the work that is a broader picture of the work that you're doing in from neighborhood, community, and then, you know, across the, you know, like I said, the 100 Gardens that project that you're doing, and then how those dots are connected to history and to economy. It's important for people to understand, you know, and to understand the history and also the socioeconomic impact of why there's a food desert right there in Sacramento, right there in Meadowview, and how long and where are the major stores right there, and how come we're not producers of our own food? I mean, those are all these questions that you can ask, you know, and then and you're answering them, you know. So yeah, it's valid to talk about Cuba. And you know, and I was looking through the website, and it's not even a $600 trip, you know, that you are staging here for folks to, if they haven't already registered, to come on board, you know, to Havana. I looked at the details of the trip, and I mean, we go through $600, you know, just on, I don't know, trivial things like fast food.
Starbucks.
You know, Starbucks, and also, you know, what we call it, you know, DoorDash, Grubhub, you know,
yes.
And on one meal,
yes.
You spend $100 to get the food delivered instead of, you know, taking, you know, the time to, you know, go out and really shop for the food and nutrition that we really need, you know, so,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
You know, so,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to share a historical point here about the civil rights struggle and the labor part of it. I wanted to bring to light General Order Number 3 that established Juneteenth. I think this is really critical for our listening family to hear and to understand. Yes, General Order Number 3 established Juneteenth, and General Order Number 3 was the proclamation that slavery was over. But for me, I can't, and I was educated under Jim Crow. Being educated under Jim Crow meant I had all black teachers. And our teachers didn't play with us. They were very focused on us being able to read, write, comprehend, and discern information, and to be able to investigate and have an understanding. So with that being said, General Order Number 3, what came before 3? General Order Number 2 and General Order Number 1. What came after 3? General Order Number 4. So back to the top. General Order Number 1 for General Granger was authority. It was the authority. It gave him the authority to come to Texas to read the proclamation. General Order Number 2 was a directive, and that directive said, go to the armory in Galveston and secure it. And what that translates to, that means go to get lock up all the guns and munitions so that the former slaves will not take up arms against their former masters. General Order Number 3 was the second directive. Tell the enslaved population that they are no longer slaves, that they are free. Let the former slave owners know that these people are free. So now we get to General Order Number 4. General Order Number 4 says, former slave owners, give your former slaves documentation that will protect them and their person and your property. Have them transport the cotton and the other goods that need to be sent, that need to be sold and taken to New Orleans to be put on the barges for the Mississippi to make this transaction, this economic transaction. So General Order Number 4 said give a letter of documentation so that your former slave, take them into your employment, your former slave will not be arrested or harassed, and that person who's been doing it for generations and years, taking the crops, the cotton, the harvested cotton to New Orleans to be put on the barge. So I bring that all back to also say that it was not incidental, it was not coincidental that black people were held over longer, a whole year or so longer than the original date of the Emancipation Proclamation.
I'm looking at the original date of the proclamation was the 22nd day of September in 1862. And so on the first day of January in the year of 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state are designated part of the United States, you know, are free people, you know.
Correct.
So it was that period of time, just what, how many months between September and January 1st, 1863? Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. And they were held over specifically to plant that cotton crop because the Southern economy was decimated by the Civil War. And I linked that to Cuba and the Caribbean, the entire Caribbean, not just Cuba, the entire Caribbean, because the Western Hemisphere had a climate for growing food. It was warm. It was tropical. Europe, Western Europe, was cold, and the trade routes that had been established
all along the western Atlantic coast of Europe. Those trade routes took them to the southern waters of the Atlantic and on through China and these trade routes for food and goods. They were looking for another route to China when all of this exploration of the Atlantic began to happen. They were looking for a shorter trade route so that it wouldn't be so much conflict with the Ottoman and the Turks and all of the other people who were claiming those trade routes. So when they set sail for the to the west looking for China, they came into the Western Hemisphere, which is the United States and the Americas. That's the reason why Columbus set sail, to find a better trade route to China, to reduce some of the conflict. And it's not so much, it is the conflict, but there was such losses in cargo and investments. It's a business model. That's why I say it's a business model. And that we were identified as that labor could be exploited to increase the profits and the return on investments, because it was about the return on investments. These ships, it took a lot of money to build these ships and to do this exploration and to fund these expeditions. So in going to Cuba for a Juneteenth celebration, I'm trying to express and expose to our families, us melanated people, it's not your fault. It's a business model. Let's understand the business model. That's Sankofa. Look at what happened in the past. Where are we here in the present? Let's apply that and understand it is a business model. Let's use that data, that information, that research, and design and plot something for our future, so that we can have better food and understand the resources and then begin to build our economic infrastructure within our communities again.
And for those, you know, listeners that are what you would say in terms of, we know what environmental justice looks like there in the 95823 zip code in terms of land, in terms of housing. You can grow, you know, food in your vertical gardens. You can grow, you know, container gardens. It doesn't have to be, I mean, I think people, too, that are used to being in a food desert are eating foods that are not healthy. So yeah, I think the education in the mind about, you know, going to the farmer markets, you know, buying fresh food, buying food from Israel farms, you know, when they are at the farmer markets. You know, we have to be participants in our own health, you know, and design. You know, I like the way you're talking about implementing aquatic, what is it, aquatic phonics programs in schools, institutions, and community needs. I also applaud you for bringing Blacks in Agricultural History Story Walk to the Sojourner Truth African Heritage Black Heritage Festival that just happened in February. And then you were part of our, you know, environmental justice panel discussion there at the during the Black Heritage Festival. So we're going to move into that because our time is coming down. You know, we have like 5 minutes left on our call today, and we want to kind of cover some other areas about the work that you're doing. A little bit about the Blacks in Agricultural Story Walk. Do you want to, I know I saw you out there planting the yard signs, you know, for folks to be able to walk and read as they're doing the 5K. I also saw you out there really early, and it was really cold and wet on Sunday during the 5K fun run at the San Pinel Community Center, where you're out there placing, strategically placing your signs. You want to talk a little bit about that project?
Oh, yes, that was such a delight. It was something that had been in my psyche for a long time. So during our Black Heritage Week, I wanted to bring to the forefront those black people who were instrumental in research, development, inventions, and new ideas. And one of the people that I discovered was Frederick Jones. This man was amazing. He created the refrigerated truck. And when I read about him, I said, oh, my gosh, the light bulb went off. This is the ice cream man. Frederick McKinley Jones invented and had a patent for a refrigerated truck. And why is this so important? It's important because during the Great Migration of blacks from the South to the North, we left our living food in the South for living wages in the North. And that created an opportunity for development economic business opportunity, meaning how can we get fresh food from the farm to the city to support this large labor workforce that has begun to develop and move from the South to the North? Well, you got to refrigerate the food to keep it from spoiling, and that's what Frederick Douglass did. But we, at the intersection of today or with any day, the practicality of his invention, it appeared to us or manifested itself in our communities as the ice cream man or the ice truck, actually, and the ice cream man. So in order to have an ice cream man, the ice cream man had to have refrigeration to keep the popsicles and the ice cream and all of that stuff cold. And that is a direct result of Frederick McKinley Jones's invention of refrigerated truck. And I thought that was just so awesome. And what I wanted to do is keep it simple. And going to a third grade type of idea is put lawn signs out, something that the kids could read, that the adults could read as they begin to come and approach the museum. And that's just a little extra way to introduce and teach information, present information, and it'll just stay in your psyche when you see a picture of this, of Frederick McKinley Jones and a diagram of the refrigerated truck along with his patent. That's our historical.
And I think that this would be an ideal time, you know, for you to bring it back. We're having Earth Day on April 13th at Florence Square, presented by the Sojourner Truth African Heritage Museum and our community engagement. And I think that bringing those signs back out, you know, on Earth Day, so that you can continue the conversation would be great, you know, because, again, a new audience that will be there, but hopefully we'll see you during that day. Just a little bit about this project. The Capital Region Creative Corps program seeks to promote tactical urbanism, art, and placemaking through a media outreach and engagement campaign. This is a listening session. We have had Roz Myers at the intersection of environmental justice and creating gardens, and she has come on to talk to us about, you know, her initiatives and what's going on with the work that she's doing there in the 95823 Meadowview community. And so final words, we only have a few seconds left. Roz?
Join us. Join us.
Next time, perhaps we'll talk about you and next time we'll get a chance to talk to Roz about her. She was out there doing Kiwan. I first talked to her, and she was doing collecting wood and collecting branches so that she can make canes and also Kwanzaa, Kanara.
Transform the city by contributing. Thank you so much. I appreciate this opportunity to share.
These installations produce. Yeah, we'll have you back another time to talk about your other projects. You have so many. And I'd like for you to share your experience with Cuba when you come back.
Thank you so much. I look forward to it.